ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय with any continuation of anything on questions yesterday in Maharaj's class and discussions on that? No? Yes? No? Okay. So then in the third chapter, then Suta Goswami, then he continues the discussions on the questions by the sages. You should always remember that the general principle is that you'll get always, like in an outline form, the short questions, direct, that you know that it's been answered. You understand what the principle is, the point being made. Then after that, then you'll get something that expands, that gives some further explanation of what's going on there. Does that make some sense? Then, the third level is where it's very, very detailed. Right? Does that make sense? Like in the incarnations. Then he's making the point that that Godhead has unlimited incarnations. Then he gives some of them, the prominent ones, he gives a short list of just describing their basic functions. Then after that, then we'll see later in the book, then very detailed pastimes and details of that incarnation will be given. Does that make sense? So we'll see this method used repeatedly by the acharyas. There'll always be, there's even a name for it. There's one, a verse that gives just a list of items. You know what I'm saying? That's the first thing. So like we'll see is that, like in Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami will explain that you have the process of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti. Right? So you have an understanding of these different parts. Then he will give a list of all the 64 items of the Vaidhi Sadhana. Right? Then he will explain them. Does that make some sense? So you'll get like that. Then he explains the others. Then after that, then he'll give another point, then he'll explain it. Like in the beginning of the second part, he'll establish that you have Vibhava, Stai Bhava, Anu Bhava, Santri Bhava, and Vyabhichari Bhavas. Right? Then he'll spend, you know, and then he will give a short explanation of them, then he'll take the rest of the nectar of devotion to explain it. Does that make sense? So it's not that they didn't have an idea that they could stick everything together. Right? It's a matter of explaining it from further and deeper understandings, and also from different angles. This is the vichar. So that's very, very important. So that's the idea, is that in it we understand what is the specific point. Then from that, then we expand that. Does that make sense? Because detail will always be very great. But the principle, or the main point, will be, you know, very succinct. Right? So there's summary studies, and there's principles. So they're different. Does that make sense? Summary means that you are summarizing, you know, the details that are important. But the conclusion is actually from how you're going to view all of these things. Right? Because constantly, because you have to be able to view this topic from Samran Navideya Prayojana. Because it has its relationship, you know, its elements, it has its process, and it has its goal. Does that make some sense? Yes.
Is it principle of vichara?
Yeah, basically. So in that, you're going to bring out these different... Even if you just want to establish the conclusion, still it will go through, it will show these different parts. Does that make some sense? It means you're going to give a simple, like a very simple, you know, like, you know, you say Krishna is God. Okay, so it's just a statement. That's the main thing. Then he's God because he's the origin of everything. He's one without a second. No one is equal. No one is greater. Okay? So then that's the next level. Then you understand, okay, that's the angle that we're coming at, that he's God. Then we'll take, okay, he's the source of everything. Then we can explain creation. Right? But even in doing that, we may say, okay, in creation, then there's these parts, primary, secondary, like this, the incarnations. Then in the primary, that means that Krishna is going to manifest the 16 elements and everything from the Mahatattva. Then Brahma is going to expand, the Prajapatis will expand the universe, and then the Manos will establish everything for mankind. Right? So that would be the second level on that. You understand? So sometimes you see an overlap. Then we'll go on to explain then Krishna's creation and Brahma's creation, like that. But that's all just an explanation of that one part that you're saying Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Because he is the source of everything. You understand? So that means anytime something new is introduced that has, you know, lots of aspects to it, it'll have details in that, then generally this principle will be followed. But sometimes because it's an overlap, the explanation of one is a continuation of the other. Does that make sense? So then you may not always see that all three are there. But the basic principle is that it's there. Because otherwise it's saying, well, this is here and this is there. We can put it all together. But when you put everything together, it gets too big for the mind to catch in the beginning. Because the idea is that we should be able to understand what's going on. Then after understanding that, then we will go into the details. Right? Does that make some sense? Otherwise, we're telling stories about Krishna, and if you don't know he's God, then there'll be so many questions that come up. But if we already understand he's God, then we can tell all the different pastimes. Does that make sense? So there's some angle by which it is approached. Okay, so then we see that basically in this chapter, there is these basic divisions that he's going to explain the Purusha avatars, right? Because Purusha avatars, as we described before, are different technically than, in one sense, the Leela avatars. Right? Because the Leela avatars are manifesting from Vaikuntha. Their mood is, I am God. Right? Does that make sense? While the Purusha avatars are, I am the maintainer, the creator, and the destroyer. Does that make sense? So there's a slight difference in mentality, in the mood. It's the same person, but it's just, that's what needs to be done. Creation, maintenance, destruction has to be done. Therefore, that aspect of Krishna's personality is manifest in the Purusha avatars. Does that make sense? Yes.
The
law of
means I am enjoyer.
That I am God, I am the joy, like this. But it's the creator, maintainer, destroyer is not so much the point. They come in to perform their pastimes. Because the Leela avatars, you find them in Vaikuntha. The 24 avatars are there, like that. So those are, they are there. But then their portions and plenary portions are like this. So they perform all the pastimes and have things happen. But the Purusha avatars are different in that they create everything, maintain, destroy. They're who's entered everything, makes everything work. And then with that, then Krishna is functioning.
Is this the reason why sages ask these two questions separate about the avatars?
Yes. Because also you see, as we mentioned before, in the Panchatattva, you have the original personality of God, just as in this chapter, right? That verse is saying, Ete Chamsa Kalapum Sa, that Krishna, he is not an incarnation. He's the original personality of Godhead. Alright? So that's one. Then you have the incarnations that are mentioned. Here it said 22 are mentioned. Right? Then you have the Purusha avatars. So that's the thing. You have the original personality of Godhead, you have his expansion, and then you have his incarnation. Right? So that's how, why in the Panchatattva you have Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita. Lord Chaitanya is the original personality of Godhead. Nityananda is the expansion, so that will be all the Vaikuntha Murtis. And Advaitacharya is the incarnation, is the Purusha avatars. Does that make sense? So there's these three aspects of Godhead. They're non-different, but at the same time there is a difference. Does that make some sense? Okay. So then after describing how the Purusha avatars, everything is, they manifest what works. So he's entering, but at the same time he's not. Means the Virat Roop is a material form of the Lord. It's not actually the Lord as his person. Does that make some sense? Means the Virat Roop is the manifestation of Krishna's potencies in the whole entire universe. So you could categorize those for people who aren't used to God having a form into these are his feet, these are his waist, these are his head, these are his arms, like that. Does that make some sense? Like the demigods are his arms, like that. Is that. But the demigods are simply the Lord's potency to administrate and manage the universe. Right? So, in the arms are represent the Kshatriyas, so they protect. Right? And so then, that is where the administration is happening. So the demigods, therefore, are the arms of the Lord. Does that make sense? Because it's the potencies of the Lord. So you'll see this here, it said, it's the Lord, his portions, you know, his plenary portions, or portions of those portions. Right? So generally the portions of the portions are the various, maybe empowered incarnations, or just manifesting a very small aspect. Right? Generally the portions are manifesting very great. But the portions of the portions may be very small. So these are vibhu or avesh. Right? Like the avesh means like shaktivesh, then they have a specific duty they're doing. You know, like Narad Muni and is an empowered incarnation. The Kumaras are empowered incarnations. Buddha is an empowered incarnation. It means these are jivas who are taking these roles. Does that make some sense? Okay, so the Virat Roop is important because it's Krishna's potencies that have entered into everything. You know, that's the importance. Krishna's potencies are in everything, have manifest in everything, and therefore it's understood how they function. Because all the various elements and how they work are still expanding from Krishna. So they're still going to work according to Krishna's nature. Does this make sense? They're still going to function according to the Sambandhabhidaya Prayojan. They all have their place, how they relate. So the Shankhya, then, which is a study of the elements of the universe, then we can understand its functioning. That also makes it more understandable about the universal form. Are we getting somewhere here or are we losing? Right? We're just trying to explain why that's an important aspect of explaining the incarnations. Right? They're going to have. Then, in the incarnations, they're going to come and be doing a specific work. Right? Because there's an activity. Does that make sense? Virat Roop is not an activity. The Virat Roop is the situation in which activity can be performed. Does that make sense? It makes sense or doesn't make sense?
Yes.
Okay? In other words, everything that you see and everything that can interact with each other is created by the universal form. But its interaction, then that is connected with Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the metaphysics create the, but then the lila avatars will come and interact with what's here. Does that make sense? You know, you have Kurukshetra, you have Kshatriyas, you have weaponry, you have astras, you have the science of warfare, you have the duties of kings, you know, all that's part of the universal form. All of his potencies create that. Now Krishna will come, and with Arjuna, then they will fight on the battlefield with all the Kshatriyas and establish, you know, destroy all the demons and establish the religious principles. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Okay. So now, in these incarnations, then we also find that in going through, they're establishing different aspects. Oh, you didn't bring the Bhagavatam. It's okay. Yeah. You have it? No. Okay. So, in the verse, generally it's said specifically what they're doing, you know, because that's the point. As an avatar will come, they had a specific job that they're going to do. And we generally see is that it's in the categories of establishing what's favorable for devotional service or the activities of devotional service itself. Right? Or just the lila avatars is then the Lord's pastime so that we can remember the Lord. Right? Because remembering the Lord and being inspired, we want to go to the Lord, is part of the process. Does that make some sense? Yeah? So we see the four Kumaras, they establish how the brahminical nature, the brahminical mood is important. And then with that, then engaging in the austerities and activities for realization of transcendence. Okay? Does that make sense? In other words, you want to understand transcendence, that's Brahman. So therefore, you need to be a Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who knows Brahman. Does that make sense? So, through their activities, they're establishing this. Right? So that's important for spiritual development. Right? Narad Muni, then he is establishing the Pancharatra and the process of following that according to Naishkarmya. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, you're going to study you're going to apply the Pancharatra. It will engage one's conditioned nature. Right? But then, after engaging that, then what you're engaging should be done in such a way that is pleasing to the Lord. Right? Without desire for fruit of action. Right? The tendency is we'll do something because we get a result. So Naishkarmya means is that result may be there, but your actual purpose is to please the Lord. Right? You don't have a problem with the result being there. Right? That's sometimes a mistake. We think that if I'm really detached or renounced, then I don't want the result. No, results will come. Any activity produces a result. The point is the results for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? The Mayavadis, they won't do any endeavor because if it creates money. Right? Probably gave an example that you bring money to one sadhu and he puts his hands behind his back because he doesn't touch money. Right? Like that. You have to give it to his secretary. You know? But Prabhupada says the opposite. You know, you come with the money, we walk forward and take it. You know, we both hands are out. Because we're going to use it in Krishna's service. We're going to give it to Krishna for the preaching and for the worship. Does that make sense? So that will go on. So he's teaching that. We're worshiping the deity. It regulates human life. It keeps us out of sinful activities. And it directs us to the Lord. And also is the mood of Naishkarmya. Developing this affection for the Lord by not doing things for ourselves, but doing it to please Him. Does that make sense? And then after that, then we have Varaha. He picks up the earth, right? Because earth is falling into an unpleasant situation, so only the Lord can pull it up out of that situation, right? So things that are very difficult, only the Lord can correct. This is the important aspect, right? Now these first three incarnations, then also, okay, we'll get around to it. Then we're seeing that, okay, Narayana Rishi, so they undergo penances to control the senses, right? Because you have to accept penance to take up self-realization. Does that make sense? So self-realization is your prominent point. You want to become self-realized. So the Kumaras have showed the need of the Brahminical, mood. And the Narayana Rishi show the need of penance, or tapasya. Means accepting some austerity for the purpose of progressing in spiritual life. Right? It means sense gratification. Prabhupada mentions is available to the hogs and dogs. It's there how much you want. But human life is meant for going back to Godhead, becoming self-realized. So we have to voluntarily accept that penance that we are going to focus on this. Yes?
I had a question on the Avesha of Ananta Sesh, because we discussed, I wanted to ask a question. You might have
Ananta Sesh.
Yeah. He's supposed to be Baladev, who is Avesha Tattva. But Ananta Sesh is supposed to be here. He's mentioned in Aveshas, which means a jiva.
No, it's not necessarily, but if it's, it means. Avesh just means that it's more powerful than Vibhu. Like that. Shakti Avesh generally means Shakti Aveshas are generally jivas. But it may be just a manifestation of a particular potency. So here, Ananta, then he would be, because he is his energy that accommodates everything in the universe. Right? So he is, space is him. Right? Does that make sense? Because everything has to fit inside, so that's him. So he has that, his potency all accommodating. And Maharaj also explained that accommodating means they accommodate your desires by the places there and the facilities are there. Then you take it or not, that's another thing, but they've accommodated it. Right? So it's accommodating all the things, but the things are there because they're a desire of a living entity. So they're there. So then that specific aspect is there. Because otherwise you don't see him so much performing pastimes or doing other things like that. So he's manifesting a particular potency or like
but
that.
He is Vishnu.
He is Vishnu, yes. So when we meant Avesh there, we meant Shakti Avesh. Like that. Okay. Then Kapila, then he gives the breakdown of metaphysics, right? The Shankhya. So Prabhupada mentions here, Shankhya is definition, that which explains very lucidly by analysis of the material elements. Right? In other words, you're explaining something through the material elements or through the metaphysics, that's Shankhya. So it has a very important aspect in when there's a need to understand why we would be doing something or its effect of any activity, the mechanics of how this is going to be effective in our spiritual life for gaining that pure love of God, that's Shankhya. Does that make sense? Right? So it's an important element. Like we see the last part of the Gita, 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, even so many aspects here, the 3rd canto, but so much is actually dealing with mechanically how things function. That makes sense? So that way the intellect can understand how the modes are working, and instead of just accepting or rejecting just on whim, we know why we should accept, why we should, or why we should reject. something. We know what it's going to do. What are the advantages, disadvantages? What is its effect? Because sometimes something that's in general given up may be accepted under certain circumstances. Does that make sense? You have an activity that maybe wouldn't be accepted, but on other activities, then it's not. Let's say, like, okay, the brahmacharis generally will stay separate from the women. Okay? That's the general principle. But they're getting on a bus and going to Calcutta. There's women on the bus. So if they want to, but they still apply the same principle that they don't mix. So therefore, you know, they situate themselves in such a way that their, you know, the interaction is minimal or not at all. Does that make sense? So you have to know what the mechanics are. The mechanics are is that by the two interacting, then you can create some problem. So the point is not interacting, not whether they're on the same bus or not, or in the same room or not, or in the same class or not. Right? That's a detail that may help that or may not. You know what I'm saying? It may be favorable to brahmacharis, they go live in the forest. So that's good, because there isn't anything to bother the senses. Then they can really focus on their studies and all that until they become, controllers of the senses. Then, if they're in the social system where you have everything happening, then they're not disturbed. Does that make sense? Is that right? So that's why you have to understand sometimes the technicalities. Otherwise, it may be sentimental why you do something or not do something. Of course, if the sentiment is directed at Krishna, that's no problem. But if it's not, then it's... Is that okay? Okay. Then we have... Dhanvantari. So Dhanvantari, then he is speaking on the subject of transcendence. Right? Means we see the Kumaras, their endeavor is for Brahman realization, right? And qualities needed to get there, like this. But here he's speaking on the transcendence itself. Dattatreya. Oh, I said Dhanvantara. Yeah, no, Dhanvantara is like Dattatreya, yes. Okay? Then next, Yajna, then he's establishing the point that if the jiva means the administration of the universe will go on. If the jiva can't do it, then the Lord will do it. Does that make sense? Right? So every post in the universe that is there for the benefit of the living entities so that they may be involved in the Lord's service in this way. Those who are interested in influence and power and facilities, then they're allowed to do that for Krishna. Right? But if someone doesn't have the particular qualification to be involved in that post, then Krishna himself will take. So here Yajna came as Indra in the time of the Swayambhu. There was no Indra. No one qualified. So he took care. Right? Or Prabhupada also mentions if there's no Brahma, because Brahma is the most pious living entity in the universe. But if there's someone who's not pious enough, Krishna himself will take the post of Brahma. Does that make sense? Like that. So then, yes.
Well, it also makes a statement that Krishna appears in each species.
Yes.
So I was wondering if there is some reference of scripture in there. And I was thinking of the 10th chapter that Krishna mentions among the Nagas and Vasuki. Mm-hmm. And among, it means that Vasuki actually is a devotee of Vishnu or Vishnu.
Yeah.
Krishna.
Mm-hmm. That you can say there, but there's also, it could be like that, or it could be also that he comes and performs, because there it's a Vibhu, it's not specific a Leela avatar. But as a Leela avatar, he comes in all the 8,400,000 species. Different Puranas mention different stories like that. I think Nisringa Purana talks about when the Lord appears as a mosquito. You know, it seems to be a few minute pastime. That he comes as a mosquito and all the demigods come as bees, and then they all buzz around and go and circumambulate like that, and they all have a good buzz, and then that's it. And then they all fly off, and that's the end of the pastime. You know? So it's a... You know? You know what I'm saying? So there's always something. So, you know, some of these, I guess, aren't overly inspiring, you know. Lord's incarnation as an armadillo or something. So, therefore, you know, who knows, you know, what it is. You know, he came and somebody threw something and it bounced off his armor and then that was the end of the pastime and it goes away. You know, it's like, you know, or there's some demons that have come in the form of ants and so he comes as an ant eater and eats them all and then, you know, pastime's over. You know, so, but he appears in every form of light. That's why the form of life exists, because he is coming from him. So he establishes what it does, right? Like the boars, they pick things up out of dirty places. That's what they do, right? Like that. And so then that principle is there, but he's pure. The ones here, because they're materialistic, then aren't considered as pure.
Yeah, everyone is on about the mountains, because Veer was mentioned and Himalayas is mentioned. The Krishna's Giriraj, and even mentioned
in the Vibhuti chapter. No, because Giriraj is directly Krishna himself, so that's Swayam, that's not an expansion. Does that make sense? Plus, he's come from the spiritual world. He's not from here. There's some whole pastime about how he got from there to here. And then from here, then I think just part of him was taken. They were carrying the top. You know, Govardhan is the top of is part of the mountain. Like that. So he was moved to Vrindavan, I think, during Ramachandra's pastime. The monkeys carried him there. But, so there's a whole... Oh, that's what it was. I think that they came, they were picking up the mountains and taking them. And then when he heard that they were taking mountains for the Lord's pastimes, then Giriraj said, I want to go. So I think Hanuman picked him up, started carrying him. But then, when he got to Vrindavan, then the announcement came that the bridge is complete, no one should bring any more mountains. So then, he was dropped there in Vrindavan. And because he was dropped, then that said why he's got all the pieces like that. You know, instead of just being a solid mountain, it cracked into pieces. Like that. That is one. So he's not from here. He's a different category. Okay. Then we have Rishabhdev. So now he's showing how the perfection means by through controlling the senses and by absorbing in transcendence, one can come to the Paramahamsa platform. Right? Prabhupada mentions that you have all the different social orders. You know, so then the development of the cultural order, then through the progression, then you have sannyas. That has four stages, and the culmination of that is Paramahamsa. So he's showing this platform, Paramahamsa, in which he is completely not connected with this material world. Right? Does that make some sense? So one should perform austerity to take up spiritual life, that will bring one to the transcendental platform. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, Prithu then is establishing, how do you say it, the proper administrative or executive function of the Lord. So he then leveled the earth, made it good for plowing and all that, because otherwise then it was uneven. Right? Because unless it's flat, it's very hard to farm. And without farming, then you won't have the facilities for the human culture. So he's establishing that and showing what is the perfect king, how a king should rule so that people can become God-conscious. Right? His father was, you know, something less than God-conscious. So he made a mess of things. He had to be removed. So then Prithu was then established. that he is showing how administration, how God administrates so that people can be God conscious, to make a favorable environment. Does that make some sense? Like that. Then, you have the tenth. So then is Matsya. So Matsya came and to save the Vedas, because the Vedas then are the the basis of the whole Vedic culture. Right? Without the Vedas, then what will things be based on? Does that make sense? The Veda itself is any activity, any understanding, any goal we have, it's coming from the Veda. So the Vedas need to be protected. Right? Plus, at the same time, he does something wonderful, and then people remember it, talk about it, like this. So he's showing special favor to his devotee, the Vaibhasvatamana. Okay. Then the 11th, as Korma, then he's serving as the pivot for the Mandarachala mountain. Now, you want to perform an activity, right? The demons and the demigods are trying to churn the nectar of immortality from the milk ocean, right? So this churning, but how does the activity go on? Right? Because when they tried to churn, the churning rod sunk. So they can't churn. So the Lord came as the pivot. So the activity then has to be based on the Lord. Does that make sense? The activity doesn't have its foundation in pleasing the Lord, because by moving the mountain it scratched his back and it created a pleasing sensation. Right? So unless it's pleasing the Lord, then any activity will not get any proper result. Therefore, it either has to be directly pleasing the Lord through being done out of devotion, or at least being done according to scriptures. Right? Because God gives the scriptures. Then there'll be a result. Otherwise, there won't be a result. Yes?
I have a question on the order of the incarnation. Because in Kriku, it's Treta or Dwapara Yuga, and Matsya and Kurma, they are at the beginning of Satya Yuga. So what is the, why did he take this order?
He's just mentioning because there's unlimited, so he's taking prominent ones. Because when they'll manifest, then that's also theirs in between. Like here, the Matsya is in between the sixth and seventh manus. Right? But between every manu there's a dissolution. But he only appeared in that one. So then sometimes they'll come. So some of them come always, like every very regularly, and some come less regularly. Yes.
But the order is specifically mentioning the incarnations in order to show the principles.
Going through the different principles in that. But otherwise, the Das Avatar, that's showing it basically kind of in order of appearance. But in here, it's not necessarily, like that. You know? Because we may be hearing the different, but whatever is the particular purpose of being established, then that's fair.
Because I think there's a need for knowing this if you study the descent of light of the kings. And then I was trying to find out where Dwapara Yuga started with this king, because in Treta Yuga it started with Purura or Urvashi, then Treta Yuga started. But Dwapara Yuga starts quite unclear. I couldn't find any reference. And if I could find it, I could also know then which pasta appears in which yuga, and it might have some significance in that.
May not. Generally, if it's important, they'll describe it. Right? Pururavas, that was important because he established the Yuga Dharma, which was Yajna. Right? Does that make some sense?
No, because Yajna is supposed to give them.
Yeah, but he'll do it through his devotees. He may impress. But point is, his Dharma comes from God. Right? Dharma is established by God. But he may do that through the devotees in some way. So it arose in his heart it mentions, and then he was inspired to perform the yajna so that he could get, you know, be united with Urvasi. Right? So that was his point. So that's also the Karmakanda yajna, but in any case, but he was a great pious personality, so therefore it's established. But ultimately, yajna is to please the Lord. You know? Yajna by Vishnu. Right? Does that make sense? So it is not specifically mentioned, either in the text or in the purport, then it may not be so important. Because Narad Muni, he preaches the deity worship, the Pancharatra, like that. So then that's already been established. He is the one who establishes that.
I know Maharaj mentions several places describing certain mountains, and that's the beginning of the Dwapara. I cannot make any connection between the Bhagavata.
It may not be so important, because this we see is that the importance of here is the end of Dwapara, because that's when Krishna appears, because he is the deity. So therefore the emphasis is put there. When it started, that's not so important. It's because the chronology is only useful if it has some meaning to application. Does that make sense? But for us, the four yugas, what's important is the elements that are there. The austerity, the liberality, the knowledge. You know, these things are what is important about the age. Cleanliness. Dwarpara cleanliness is the principal element. You know, so that we use in this liberality is now. Right? So we do the ultimate welfare work. The knowledge is for, because yajna is so much knowledge is there, so that in connection with Krishna, and austerity is for satya. That's more important. When they begin, if you want, then you go to an astrologer. They can give you that the day of the week it started. Mm-hmm. But I know of, I think Kali Yuga started on Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, what's more interesting about this king was ruling. This
came with
the
bandit. Oh, yeah, may find in something. Yeah. May find. The Bhagavatam may or may not. If it's important, it'll give it. If it's not, it won't give a mention. Because you're discussing, see, the Bhagavatam is unlimited. But you have 7 days. So the essence of the Bhagavatam needs to be spoken. Right? So this is the essence of the essence. You know, Krishna is the essence, and then this is the most valuable and useful aspects for us. Okay. Then we have Dhanvantari and Mohini. Right? So they'll be explained later, in later chapters. Dhanvantari comes and gives the process of health. You know, physical, emotional, intellectual health, social health, how to interact, like that. He gives, in this part, he gives the nectar, what they're all looking for. And Mohini then sees that it's given to those who are qualified, right? Because facilities are given to those who are God conscious. Those who are not are simply going to use it for a problem. They're simply going to make a mess. Right? So that's why she comes to distract it. Right? Because naturally faith is there in woman. Woman behaves nice, sweet, that, then there's faith. Like that. So therefore it comes like this. If you come as a man, there'd be a fight. If you come as a beautiful woman, then nobody says anything. You know? That's the thing. I think there's an English saying that they were going to do some operation on a king. You know, king's powerful. And the ministers were saying, how are we going to hold this guy down? You know, no question. Holding him down. So then the prime minister said, it's either going to take 10 strong men or one woman. Mm-hmm. Like that. So they decided they didn't have the 10 men, so they brought one woman. And she held him down. Like that. Because there's this natural just trust or faith. Like that. So Mohini Murti came. And so for the devotees it works, but for the demons it less than works. They ended up with nothing. Right? The demigods ended up with something. It's illusory, but they got something. That the demigods ended up with nothing. I mean, the demons ended up with nothing. Then Nrisimhadev, then he, you know, destroyed the atheist, because otherwise people think they can function separately than God by their own arrangements. So then that was shown that that process doesn't exactly work. If it doesn't work for Hiranyakashipu, it's not going to work for anybody. There was no, never in history, a bigger demon than him. Right? 15th, then Vamana. So he came to, you know, show that he doesn't require anything, but he can take everything. You know, so Hari, with Pabagizha, with 10 hands he can give, or 10 hands he can take. We have 2 hands, he has 10. So if he wants to take away, how we can stop it? But if he wants to give, then it's way more than we can accommodate. So Vamana then taught, we can see later, it's explained, this principle of that he takes away from those who are materially attached and makes them dependent upon him. But those who aren't materially attached, he gives. So that's also a symptom. Right? Someone has all facility, but they're not, you know, it's being used for Krishna, then that's considered a better position. Someone's more advanced than someone who Krishna has to take everything away to make them surrender. Right? Does that make sense? Because when they have, they forget. So you take it away, they remember. But if he has and he remembers, and engages in Krishna's service, that's better. Okay, then Parasuram is establishing that the Kshatriyas can't function without the Brahmins. If they go against the Brahmins, then things aren't going to function properly. You know, so it's also there. 17th, then Vyasadeva, then he established, he wrote the Vedas down because they were being very hard to understand. So therefore, he made it approachable, Prabhupada says here, for the Dvijabandhu, Shudras, and the women. Because generally the tendency is to be more on the sentiment and desire than on this is the technicalities of the Shastra, this is the duty, and so it's done. Like that. Because in this age, then, people don't have that such focus as in previous ages. Like that. So therefore they're compared, the men of this age are more compared to the women. Like that. Like that. Shudras are women. Because the how you say? Religiosity can be taken, but the focus and determination that's necessary for the other processes of realization aren't there. You know, to sit for 60,000 years and do meditation, people don't have that. The standards of cleanliness you require and focus for the deity worship, the technicalities and perfectness of the yajnas, people don't have like that. Yes?
Can we say that Vyasadeva simplifies Vedic understanding?
He simplifies the Vedic understanding by putting it into categories that we can see all that knowledge together in one place. Right? It's just like Prabhupada's written in his purports all the knowledge throughout his whole purports, but from one place he says one thing, another few chapters later another point, a few cantos later another point, like that. So if you study the whole thing and one's focused, one gets all that and puts it all together. If not, then it would be categorized or analyzed where all of the same thing is put in one place. Does that make sense? You know? So Prabhupada's done that with the Gita. That would be when we have our course, the study will be according to that principle. First will be according to the chronology of the book and just what points are being made. Then after going back and studying according to Prabhupada's analysis of the Gita, where he takes all the points of the Gita and puts them in groupings of Sambandha, Dhyaya, and Prayojana, and then gives what verses are connected to this one point. Like you say, we're not this body, but it comes up many places in the Gita, not just in the second chapter. You know what I'm saying? So generally, both of these, studies are done. Depends on sometime, probably September or a few months later, next to the coming year.
Yeah. Before categorizing the four Vedas, was it written in a way how to, you know, in an applicable way? Means like how to apply it? And then
means the Veda, all the knowledge is there, you know, but it's a matter of someone had the focus and the time they study all the Vedas. That's why it's always before you see Manu and others talk about Brahmacharya studies the three Vedas. That means all the Veda. So then he has all that knowledge, then he knows how to apply it. He's living with the teacher, they're applying it, they see others, they hear the histories, because all these things are part of it, but it's not all the histories are put in one place. All the Ayurvedas in one place, all the Sthapanavedas in one place, all, like that. That's what makes it easier, because it's all in one place, so you can study it easier.
Trying to understand why it was, if we look at the organization, why it was written in that form, the Veda?
Because people had the focus to read the whole book. Nowadays, people can't get through the whole Veda. They can only, you know, how many people here even study one Veda, or even study one branch of knowledge fully? So they can only take part, so therefore it's broken down, so whatever part you take, it itself is complete, you can get everything from it. And from there, then you can get a vision into the other. But before, they would study all of them, they'd know all of them, that's called anuchana. But nowadays, they study one, and then from that, you can connect it to the Supreme. But if you know the science of how it works, the fundamentals, then from that you can take it and apply it on any branch of knowledge, because it's all just one Veda. Is that okay? Okay. Then, 18th in Ram. So he doing work for pleasing the demigods by removing the atheistic elements, because they just create trouble. Right? He was giving so much trouble to the universal management. And, you know, turning everything upside down. Things should work according to Shastra. He's making a mess of this. Right? By, you know, sending people who shouldn't be at the heavenly planets, taking the demigods out, tying them up, putting on the steps of his, you know, asan, and, you know, doing all kinds of stuff. You know, it's just, you know, taking them all, tying them in one house, so it'll be his son when he's born, will be born in a good sign. You know, all this kind of stuff. You know, so therefore, Ram came to do this work for the demigods by removing this annoying element, like that.
Ramachandra also established the principle of ideal king.
Yes, he also showed it but it's Lila Avatar. While Prithu is showing is the potency of administration, while Ramachandra is the perfect king. Yeah. Mm. But that's for pastime.
Is there a connection between Parashurama and Ramachandra?
They're all like that, because there's three Ramas. Balaram is also the three. They're considered the three Ramas.
Isn't that connected in the same yoga? Because Parashurama destroyed the Kshatriyas and Ramachandra established.
Yeah, maybe. But I haven't seen it necessarily mentioned here like that. 19th and 20th are Krishna and Balaram. But they're mentioned because they're not their original, so they're not technically incarnations. We say incarnate means he appears, but they're not. They're the source of incarnations, right? They're not avatar, they're avatari, where all the avatars come from.
I also heard that there is another Krishna who is Yuga avatar, and he is not the original.
That will be there. But in this one, what he's mentioning here, this is Swayam Krishna, because this is being spoken just after Krishna's appearance. So that's what they're asking. Yeah, Krishna's left, now where is everything going? Like that. Okay, so that's this. They're not talking about another Yuga's, another Dwapara Yuga, where the avatar is black and called Krishna. Like that. Then you have Buddha, right? Who deluding those who are envious of the faithful. Right? It means you had the proper persons who are following the Vedic literatures. These people were misapplying the Vedic literatures for their own sense gratification and, you know, killing the animals. So morality and non-violence are useful principles, you know, basic principles of religious life. They're not religion itself, they're principles on which religion stands. Does that make some sense? Like that. So Buddha, Nard, and Varaha, they established faith. Right? He was establishing faith here in himself. Nard Muni in the process, and the Lord and in the process. Varaha, that the Lord will protect. The Lord, earth has fallen into difficulty, he picks it up. The Lord is the one who makes things happen. Then you have at the end, then you have the Kalki avatar. So he'll come and just remove those who you know, have become unfit. You know, the government's unfit, the people are unfit. So then he comes and removes them, and then one can start things properly, fresh. So if the government's plundering, you know, and the people are not interested in God consciousness, very difficult. So the point is all those unlimited incarnations, Krishna is the source of all of them, right? And then the descriptions of Krishna and his pastimes, the Bhagavatam, that then is the incarnation of, for us, you know, that we have now. Does that make sense? So that's what we're functioning with here. Right? So here that's mentioned. Whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and the evening gets relief from all miseries of life. Yeah. Means. Yeah. What is it? That was. Just a minute. Yeah, only by making such inquiries, only those who render unreserved, uninterrupted, favorable service under the lotus feet of the Lord Krishna, who carries the wheel of the chariot in his hand, can know the creator of the universe in his full glory, power, and transcendence. Only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant, for such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes and guarantees 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Like that. Okay, and then the last. This Bhagavat Purana is as brilliant as the sun, and it has arisen just after the departure of Lord Krishna to his own abode, accompanied by religion, knowledge, etc. Persons who have lost their vision due to dense darkness of ignorance in the age of Kali shall get light from this Purana. Right, so then, the ultimate goal of life, the perfection of life, the best thing for everyone is hearing about the Lord's name, form, pastimes. The essence of everything is his name, form, and pastimes. Right, of all the incarnations, and ultimately then Krishna is the source, so all his, therefore everything is about him, all his incarnations, and then what will give us that deliverance or give us that will be the Bhagavatam. Right, so this is, as Maharaj mentioned, very very nice chapter, because it establishes very clearly the process of devotional service based on hearing and chanting the Lord's name, form, and qualities. Okay, so then that ends the class here. So a few announcements that are there is that today all means you gave in the essays yesterday, right? So Maharaj went through them. They will all be given back to you now. You can come up, Kashi Sharpa will give them out. So you take them now, and he will also give you a copy of what Maharaj wrote, what he would feel would be the answer to this question. That will give you an idea of how to approach these questions, how to write, how to present. So then you take that, and if you want to make any corrections yourself on your paper, you know, then you do that. But in any case, you bring it back on Thursday. So after class on Thursday, you hand back in your papers, and those will be kept in the file. And then on Friday, we'll be given the next assignment. But the one, Maharaj is the one you keep, and most likely at any of the ones where there's like a conclusion of a group of points, like chapters or pastime, then Maharaj will give questions that he himself will also then afterwards give the answers on. So then you'll also end up with a series of answers like that. But that'll be in not every chapter or every week. Those will be. It'll be at once where there's a finishing of a particular like aspect of the pastime or some discussion or like that. Okay. Then Maharaj mentioned that this is just who he felt were very, very nice. Outstanding essays. He gives the names here. They're not in particular order. It's just how I happened to write it down, like that. Brihasya, Devidasi, Murai Gupta, Das, Uttamashloka, Shanti Parayana, Anupam Krishna Das, Gaur Krishna Das, Kashishwar, and Priti Vardhana. And then he said that on yesterday's handout, he mentions that what's on the first page, that's correct, about the two attachments, but when he mentions about attachments on the last page, that was not correct, because that's a separate, completely separate thing. That's not to do with this. And that, yeah. And then the last one is that now, just so it's kind of understood how things are running like this, and it started on and information has been given out, as we discussed before, we would like to because he wanted you to read the course objectives handout first. So he's asking for that starting from Thursday, that devotees, the students, start giving the presentation. You know, it can be short. It means it's what you find from the chapter and from the course study is of essence. You know, any points, verses, and that you feel is there, something you would like to bring out, something that meant something to you, then we're looking for that. So basically it'll start from now on. Then we'll do that every chapter. Then a different student will speak, so that way you get the preparation. And so you give the first presentation, and after that, then it'll be myself will make comments, Maharaj will make comments. There'll be discussions and comments from everyone. So then we'll actually go into the full kind of more workshop mode. Does that make sense? Up to now, it's been a little bit more lecture. Yes.
Will that take off time from classes?
From classes?
All classes will be separate and presentations separate?
No, it's all at the same time. It means at 8 o'clock, then the presentation will be made, you know, however long it is, and then after that, then we'll add in our points on them and discussions and questions and like that. So that's the whole idea. Does that make sense? So do we have anyone who's... So let's start with the fourth chapter. Because that's actually where then the discussions on the Bhagavatam, is basically beginning of where he's answering, gets into pastimes. Up to this, it's been more the philosophy and all of that. Okay? So, do we have anyone who wants to start off with the fourth chapter? Anyone enthusiastic? You see, Shanti is looking enthusiastic. Yeah? Okay. So you start on Thursday. And then afterwards is just whatever it is after that, then you can come up if there's any particular chapter that you'd like or something that's there. We've handed out for 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. Yeah, so if anybody's volunteering for those, then it's already done. Anything like that. And then this Friday we'll hand out the next group of points. So if there's anyone who'd like to, then you mention your name to Kashishwar Prabhu when you come and get your hand in your papers and take up, no, excuse me, you're getting your papers. Yeah, okay. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Sāngvita Bhaktivedinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Prema.